This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into 5-on-3, WFUV Sports' best, if only, hockey podcast. I am Tucker Austin, joined today by Grace McCarron and Sophia Smith over Zoom. Of course, it's the middle of the summer, and the 2024-25 NHL season has finally come to a close. The playoffs always run for a really long time. We're well into June, and the cup has finally been distributed, and it's the Florida Panthers back on top. They're back-to-back champs. But before we get into that and a couple of other things on today's show, Grace, we'll start with you. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Bummed about hockey season being over, though, because this is like a long stretch that we have of just I love baseball. It's my favorite sport, but like long stretch of nothing else. Especially
yeah. I think it's 70 days until the NFL season starts or something along those lines. So
and then it's like everything at once, though. So I'm like, I should really just appreciate this time now to just watch baseball, but I'm still bummed about hockey season being over. But Stanley Cup finals were fun. Excited to talk about them.
Yeah, I am very excited to talk Panthers. I'm in Maine right now. I'm outside, fresh air. But I wanted to hop on here and talk to you guys.
Is it hot up there right now? It's hot everywhere else. But, you know, like, Maine.
Yeah, it's like 80.
Oh, that's so comfortable.
Yeah.
With what the rest of the country's going through right now with the heat wave, that's money, 80 degrees. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll get right into it then. The Florida Panthers defeat the Edmonton Oilers in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final in Florida at home. The Road Warriors, as they've been all this postseason, they actually got to celebrate in their own home locker room. They beat the Oilers 5-1. Very Panthers win out of them in Game number 6. And boy, Sam Reinhart with maybe one of the best performances I've seen in a championship clinching game ever, like across sports. I mean, like the hat trick on the empty netter, and then you add a fourth because why not? Reinhart had people throwing hats on his front lawn the days after. But I mean, this was just an incredible series. But we'll look at Game 6. First off, particularly, I think the key here for the Panthers was the fact that they opened the scoring. They got out on the front foot. Bobrovsky was a wall against the Oilers' early onslaught, and then similarly to the rest of the series, they kind of lose some gas. Florida, presses the objective, and then they wind up scoring the first one. Reinhart, absolutely filthy goal, a la Brad Marchand in Game 5. And then you had another with Tkachuk, like a random toss at the net after a defensive breakdown that made it 2-0 with like 40 seconds left. And, from there, it was pretty much all Panthers. The Oilers were chasing for the rest of the game. Vasily Podkolzin managed to fire one in randomly in garbage time at the end. And this turned into a very usual Panthers win. But I get like, who stood out the most for you in this game? Grace, starting with you.
Well, I mean, the obvious answer here is obviously Sam Reinhart. But I mean, we've been talking for a long time about the goaltending in this series, like since the series started, even since the playoffs started, that's been a theme. So, I mean, Bobrovsky made some excellent saves. And then there was the other side with Stuart Skinner, who I've kind of been on the sympathy train for in the past month or so. Actually, for longer than that, but especially in the past month. I think that was the difference here, because I do think Edmonton was capable of beating Florida. But when you have that, like, the struggle of, like, who's going to start, Game 5 and 6 after you put Picard in, etc. When do you take Skinner out if he's struggling? It was too much of a question. And then Bobrovsky on the other side was always so solid. Like, he rarely had a bad game this playoff. So Bobrovsky was one person who stood out to me in this game and throughout the series. And then on the other side, it was kind of the opposite for Stuart Skinner.
Yeah, I mean, Skinner, there's not an answer for the way that he played, and they clearly didn't have another option. They tried Pickard, it didn't work. So yeah, it sucks for the Oilers because I know how much it meant to them, but he wasn't making the saves. But as far as like the Panthers in game six, obviously we like Sam Reinhart, like you said, 4 goals. He has been like an incredible player the past like 3 4 years in the league, and it just shows that some of these players, I think he was drafted, I don't know, I think he was drafted in the first round, I don't know what exactly, which pick, but in Buffalo he wasn't really anything special, and I think that it shows that sometimes guys have to, you just have to wait it out. Sometimes these high draft picks are going to end up being something. It's just going to take a little bit longer. And I think he's really hit his potential. He is making the contract look amazing. And yeah, he was a huge, huge part of that win.
Yeah, and he was their biggest contributor in the Stanley Cup final. Sam Reinhart wound up with 10 points. 7 of those were goals across the 6 games. And, you know, he probably would have won the Conn Smythe too for that performance in the final had it not been for the incredible postseason performance of Sam Bennett, who actually did win the Conn Smythe. Unfortunately for me, my total prediction didn't come through. I had the Panthers winning the cup since back in the first round, but I had Bobrovsky as my Conn Smythe, and it turned out to go to Bennett, although Bobrovsky certainly like left everything out on the ice as he usually does. But you know, like the award tends to go to offensive players because their impact is a lot more visible. And I mean, Sam Bennett's impact was unmissable in this postseason. Led the postseason in goals across the entire NHL, and also 13 of his goals came on the road, which is the most in a single postseason all time. So really incredible performance from Sam Bennett, and embodying that culture of the Florida Panthers where they don't care about the fact that like they have to play some of their games on the road. It doesn't matter. If there's ice in 2 goals, the Panthers are going to skate it up. And so he just absolutely powered that team all postseason. And the Panthers lift their second straight cup. There's just like a couple of other stats that I wanted, or not necessarily stats, but a couple of other points I wanted to bring up about the Panthers. Well, actually, this one's kind of about the Panthers and the Lightning. 4 of the last 6 Stanley Cups have been won by teams from Florida, which is pretty interesting. The Panthers themselves have been in the last 3 Stanley Cup finals, and they've won the last 2. That first one, they lost against the Vegas long-term injured reserves. And then, oh my, like this team was just so good this year. They had Rod Brind'Amour after the Panthers wiped the floor with the Carolina Hurricanes. They had Rod Brind'Amour po like in post-game pressers saying that the Florida Panthers are the standard. And that
That's crazy.
it leads me to think, how many other teams now are going to stop just like kind of hating on the Panthers and start to just emulate the Panthers like en masse? We could see multiple teams in the seasons that follow start to try and construct a roster that can play the way that these Florida Panthers do. But it's going to be really, really difficult for anybody to match these guys. As we've seen, like arguably the greatest hockey player on the planet, Connor McDavid, has not figured out how to beat them, and he's had 2 chances to do it now. So that's all said and done with the Stanley Cup. The Panthers will defend it for the second straight year going into next season, looking for a third in a row. But that sort of leads us into the NHL awards. a little bit here because obviously we haven't had a chance to talk about the awards yet on 5 on 3. Wanted to save them for after the whole season kind of wrapped up, so we could look at everything after the fact. Now that the Stanley Cup and the Conn Smythe have both been awarded, you can look at the other trophies. And I think just for the sake of like not spending too much time on all of them because some of them are pretty obvious, I'll just read all the names, and then we'll kind of go from there with any like surprises. The Hart Trophy went to Connor Hellebuyck, kind of crazy. First goalie to do it, I think, since 2008 and 9 or maybe 2014. I forget what the stat was when I saw it, but yeah, Hellebuyck wins the Hart. He also wins the Vezina. The Vezina was for sure going to Hellebuyck after the season that he had. But the Hart Trophy, really interesting, I thought, especially because of the other guys who were up for it this year. Nikita Kucherov, who had another incredible season for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and this year without the assistance of Steven Stamkos. So Kucherov was still finding ways to make himself incredibly valuable to the Lightning. And then Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers, who, yes, had a very productive season for the Edmonton Oilers, but I find it hard to look at the Oilers roster and think of Draisaitl as like someone who should be winning Hart trophies when Connor McDavid exists. But Connor Hellebuyck edges out both of them for the Hart trophy. After the Hart, go to the Norris Trophy for the best all-around defender. Cale Makar picks up his second Norris Trophy in the last 4 seasons. He's also been a finalist in 5 of his first 6 years in the NHL. Pretty solid work from Cale Makar. The Selke for the best defensive forward goes to Alexander Barkov, his second straight and third overall. The Calder Trophy goes to Lane Hutson of the Montreal Canadiens. The fourth defenseman in the modern era to lead rookies in points. And then the Jack Adams Trophy for the best head coach in the NHL goes to Spencer Carberry, who in his second season as the head coach of the Caps and as a head coach in the NHL at all, wins that one. And I think deservedly so there as well, because the Capitals, nobody really expected them to compete, and it was really supposed to be like kind of an Ovechkin, like basically an Ovechkin show to see if he could break the record. But then he did, and the momentum that he generated doing that pretty much pushed them into the playoffs on its own. But out of those award winners, was there anything like weird or crazy that you guys saw? Maybe like a possible snub? There's one I'm thinking of in particular that could be here that I know Trey Rodriguez would probably most definitely bring up. But Sophia, we could start with you here. Do you see anything out of the ordinary or anything that caught you off guard with the awards this year?
Well, I first want to say that I think that Spencer Carberry absolutely deserved the Jack Adams. I think that he did a great job with the Capitals this season, and it was really, really impressive. One thing with the Hart, I don't know. I was just like surprised about Hellebuyck, even though I totally understand why. Like I think he deserved it, but I was just surprised. I think that Pasta might have deserved it just because he was on the horrible Bruins team this year, and he still had 106 points. And I think like when they were winning games, it was because of him. And like Lane Hutson had a great season, but Celebrini, I think should have won the Calder.
Yeah, on Hellebuyck, I was not that he doesn't deserve the Hart. I think he does. I just didn't think it would happen because him, like people winning the Vezina and the Hart in the same season is so rare. I think it's only happened 4 other times in history. So that was kind of a surprise to me. I thought for a while it was going to be Draisaitl, and then like Kucherov kind of someone wrote about him, and I was like, yeah, it should probably be him actually. But I don't think he didn't deserve it or anything. It's just more of a, like, it's more of a testament to how important he was to that Jets team that won the President's Trophy. And then it's kind of interesting how a lot of the reason that they did not make it very far in the playoffs was because of some mistakes that he made. Obviously you can't put it all on him, but that certainly didn't help them. But I think like Lane Hutson, I kind of saw that one coming. Talking that stat you said about only being, what was it, the fourth rookie ever to lead defenseman in
Yeah,
points?
fourth rookie defenseman. Well, yeah, so fourth defenseman to lead all rookies in points in
Oh,
a
gotcha.
season.
Okay, I flipped it. Yeah, that to me kind of is all due respect to Macklin Celebrini, who was fantastic on a Sharks team that was not very good. But that to me, that stat that you said just kind of cinched it for me for Lane Hutson. But overall, I think the rest of them like made a lot of sense. There weren't really any big surprises, but just for Connor Hellebuck, kind of not shocking that he won the Hart, but a little bit surprising that he obviously was a lock for the Vezina, but also won the Hart. It's pretty cool.
And I just think it puts Winnipeg in such a weird place when it comes to Hellebuck, because you look at his regular season exploits and he's winning Vezinas, he's winning Hart trophies now, but when it comes down to the playoffs, things don't pan out exactly the same for the Winnipeg Jets. I actually they were a favorite for me to go after the cup this year, before the postseason got underway, but then. As it turned out, the Jets were not all they were chalked up to be for like the third or fourth year in a row now. And it, like the questions have to come, like you have to start asking questions at some point, because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And if they just keep running out Connor Hellebuck in the playoffs and it keeps not working, sort of at what point do you maybe consider that Hellebuck is the problem? It is near impossible to fathom because of how good he is in the regular season. And I can't believe I'm talking about someone who won the Vezina and the Hart in the same year and acting like the Winnipeg Jets should think about moving on from him. But this is the reality of the situation that the Jets are now in. So it's going to be definitely interesting. I think it's something that people should keep their eye on moving forward with Hellebuck and the Jets. Even though most people would probably say, "Don't worry about it at all," and that's probably the safe way to go. Where like, why would they try to move Hellebuck? Like, if not Hellebuck walks, but like, again, like why would he walk? The organization loves him. But really, it gets to a point where like, if they can't get past the second round, and it's because Hellebuck's play falls apart in the postseason, it puts him in a really difficult spot. But yeah, other than that, I think I was pretty okay with all of these awards. Obviously, the Celebrini thing, but I thought Lane Hutson was stellar for the Canadiens this year, and was part of their little push into the playoffs at the end of the season. And then the only other thing, a little bit of devil's bias out here, but I think Nico Hischier was snubbed for a Selke finalist. Maybe not win, but he wasn't even a finalist, and I thought that was pretty ridiculous. But yeah, that is the NHL awards. Honestly, not too much controversy in there this year. But I do just also want to shout out Cale Makar one more time, because 92 points as a defenseman, like on a team that has Nathan MacKinnon, like that's really really insane. But yeah, that is going to move us on to our last little topic we got to touch on here. And being that this will probably be the last episode of 5-on-3 before next season, we could also like just do our last little check-in with each of the teams. We actually have people familiar with all three of the Metro teams here on this show today, so we'll be able to kind of let's get a finger on the pulse before we head into the summer break. But we got some trade buzz in the NHL already. And obviously we've already had some content on the Chris Kreider situation, on him on his way to Anaheim, but Anaheim is back in the news again, and it's not for acquiring a player this time, it's for dealing one out. Trevor Zegras is no longer an Anaheim Duck. He's a Philadelphia Flyer. The Flyers send Ryan Poling, a 2025 second rounder and a 2026 fourth rounder to Anaheim to get Zegras. And I mean, I think this makes Zegras sort of the cornerstone of Philly's future a little bit. I guess just like looking for any thoughts on this trade. Sophia, we'll start with you here. Is Zegras a cornerstone?
I would say yes. I think that Philly is going to be really good next year. They have Rick Tocchet now, and Zegras and Michkov sounds good to me. I was surprised about this trade just because I don't know. It seemed like Zegras, and they've been talking about moving him, but I didn't expect it to happen. And then Kreider got traded there, and Zegras seemed really excited about that. So I was surprised, but I think that it makes a lot of sense for the Flyers. Zegras has been injury prone, didn't really have a great season last year, but I like maybe a change of scenery will do him good, and he has Drysdale there. I expect the Flyers to be a playoff team next year. That's my expectation, my prediction.
Yeah, I like this move for both sides. It was clear that Trevor Zegras had a lot of hype around him early, and he had some great moments. He had some good stretches, but then he kind of had inconsistent play, the injuries, and it was obviously not really working for Anaheim in the way that they wanted it to for him as like a franchise cornerstone. And I think he can be that for Philly, who is trying to turn the page from, I think they were the fourth worst team in the NHL last year. Bad, bad stuff for them. But I read on, I think it was The Athletic that wrote about it yesterday, that a source told them the Flyers want him to play center, which is where they like really need help, even though he played on the wing mostly last year. But so that would be that's going to be interesting to me to see like where they try to play him. But happy for him that he's reunited with Jamie Drysdale. I think that'll be nice. Like when players are struggling, sometimes it's nice to like be with your best friend on a team. It sounds silly, but I think it's true. So I'm interested to see how this works out for both of them.
Yeah, it's at least a fun story for Philly, reuniting Drysdale and Zegras. Good news for Trevor Zegras, though. He doesn't have to change like the color of any of his like personal items from Anaheim. If he got anything that was like orange to match the team colors, it's good. He found another orange team in Philly. It's fine. But yeah, Zegras is on his way to Philadelphia. Also from the last week, on June 19th, the Kraken got Mason Marchment off the Dallas Stars for a fourth rounder this year and a third rounder in the 26th draft. Seattle's been moving some pieces around, and they're definitely looking to rebound after they went to the playoffs and then they were really just mid the next season. And like being a new expansion franchise, it's kind of hard to find your footing at first. Very few teams will be able to ever match the almost immediate success that the Golden Knights found themselves in. But Marchment could be a step in the right direction. He was a fantasy legend for me last year when I was doing hockey fantasy. Also on June 18th last week, the Devils got active. They offloaded Erik Hala to the Nashville Predators, which was only a matter of time before Hala got dumped by the Devils. He provided like very little production for the Devils last year, definitely less than what the Devils were expecting in terms of like matching his paycheck. But that just comes from age and receding playing ability. Like it is what it is. Erik Haula was old. The Devils were trying to get the last bit of juice out of him, and now they're done with him. I saw a lot of people on Devils social media. They didn't expect the Devils to get more than maybe a fifth rounder out of anybody for Erik Haula, but the Devils get a defenseman and a fourth rounder in this year's draft in return. So I think that's pretty solid, especially because the Devils are going to be looking to revamp that bottom six of the forwards. They're trying to roll four lines next year instead of relying on the top two. But there was one other trade that I want to touch on that actually happened today. It happened just 2 hours ago. The Oilers have gotten active in the aftermath of their second straight Stanley Cup final loss. Evander Kane is gone. Evander Kane is going to Vancouver, traded for a fourth round pick in this year's draft, heading back to Edmonton. Kane played, I think, 3 years in minor league hockey out in Vancouver, and he has some ties out there. So he seems pretty excited to get to go back to Vancouver. And I think it's a really interesting addition for a Canucks team that's been looking for a way to get over the hump. Sort of like, I wouldn't say similarly to the Winnipeg Jets, because the Jets have a lot of regular season success and then fall short. The Canucks don't always have the same regular season success, but then they always look slightly better in the playoffs than the Jets, but then still wind up falling short in the Western Conference. And so for the Canucks, this is obviously a move to try and become more of a competitor. But when you look at it from the Oilers side, Grace, we'll start with you here. Could this be a harbinger of even more moves in the future for the Edmonton Oilers?
That's a good question, Tuck. My first thought when I saw this was good for the Oilers because Evander Kane's kind of been known to be a problematic figure, I think would be the best way to summarize him as a person. And he also did not, on the hockey end of things, did not do great in the playoffs for them. So they probably saw this as an opportunity, like, if we're gonna get rid of people, this here's one to start with. They took the fourth rounder, and that's that. I'm interested to see how this goes for Vancouver because they've had kind of a weird season with the locker room this past year, and he's not known as a great locker room guy. Now, that might not be true for every single place he goes to. It's just what I've seen from his career history. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I mean, the upside is good, but it's like, is it? It's kind of one of those things where, like, is it worth the risk of him being a problem? But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was kind of like, what is Vancouver, what are they thinking here? Because they obviously had all of these issues with JT Miller, wanted to get him out, and then now they're bringing in somebody who is known to be, like you said, problematic. So, but I do understand they want to get fresh faces in there, fresh talent, and maybe change of scenery will, new environment will be good for Kane.
Yeah, and I like the first thing that comes to mind for me, I guess, is the McDavid question. Because like it is equally as hard to imagine, I think, if not harder to imagine McDavid and the Oilers parting ways than it is to imagine the Jets moving on from Connor Hellebuyck. But I'm like, if McDavid wants to win a cup and he can't see himself doing that in Edmonton, he's now been to the finals 2 straight years and sort of like the same problems arose both years for these Oilers. And like maybe 2 years is not enough, but like the Stanley Cup final is a hard round to reach in the hardest playoffs, like for the hardest trophy to win. There aren't even great odds that the Oilers, as they're constructed right now, can go back to the Stanley Cup final in the foreseeable future, because other teams are going to start developing, getting better while they're still sitting with the same structure. And, this move with Evander Kane makes me think that other guys might be on the chopping block too. They're looking to move some things around. Have to imagine the goaltending situation gets solved this offseason. And the only solution I can really see is get somebody else in between the pipes. It can't be Skinner anymore, because like, yes, when he's on, he's great, but you can't afford to only get a good game out of your goalie in game four, and that's it. Like that's not a winning formula. But yeah, I think that does it for like the most recent actual trades that have gone through. But I suppose this could be a slot for any rumors. Just before we wrap up, I want to touch on all of our three metro teams in the New York area. Sort of get like a final temperature here before we head into the long summer break. Sophia, we'll start with you here. Start with the New York Rangers. Where are we at in Madison Square Garden?
Well, first, I want to say I'm very sad about the Chris Kreider trade. I think that that was a mistake, and I don't think that jury should have done that. But we can't harp on the past. So I think that I'm not expecting anything from this season. I really want them to do better than they did last season, obviously, but I don't expect Drury to make any big moves just because next offseason is such a like there's so many names that I think that he's kind of just gonna play it safe for now, and then next season, like aim for a big fish. But I'm hoping that the locker room figures itself out this season. I would like to see a captain be named, whether it's JT Miller or Trocheck. But I do think that like it's their team now with Kreider gone. I'm hoping that the vibes are more positive. I like Mika, I want him to improve both like physically and mentally. And I hope that it's a step in the right direction so that next off season, if Jury's gonna go that route, that when he attains whoever he's gonna go for it, that it pays off.
Big culture building year in Midtown Manhattan for the New York Rangers. It is going to be big. Like new head coach coming in, he's got to kind of build his own culture, get all the guys to buy in, especially like you mentioned, get that locker room reunited, because who knows where it went wrong. Maybe we'll never really know the full story, but something went wrong, the locker room completely fractured, and it turned into a complete nightmare at the end of Laviolette's tenure. But Grace, the Islanders, not in as toxic of a spot as the New York Rangers, I guess I would say, but not really where they would want to be, especially when you look at like playoff appearances from like 2, 3 years ago. Now sort of back in a spot like battling to get into the playoffs. But where are we at? Where are we at with the Islanders going into next year?
Well, the NHL draft is on Friday. I'd say that's obviously a very, very important night for the Islanders. I would love for them to take Matthew Schaefer. I have not seen anything that definitively says that that's the plan. But the new GM said we have an idea of who we're gonna pick. So we'll see what we'll see what happens. I've seen some things about like could they trade into the to get James Hagans as well as Matthew Schaefer. I would like if that happened. I don't know if that's more of a fantasy than something that could actually happen, but yeah, the locker room I think is fine. There's some things that I'm interested to see, like the new GM, interested to see how he works out. Patrick Waugh is staying, which I was happy about. So I would say generally I'm slightly optimistic about next season, but kind of like keeping my expectations moderate. I do think they could make the playoffs. They have a lot of great players, especially if Matt Barzal comes back from his injury-riddled season. Hopefully he's good. Anders Lee was great this year. Hopefully he's Bo Horvat, etc. I could go on and on, but they have a lot of players that I think are difference makers. It just has to all come together. And we'll just It's kind of like a we'll see season for them. Like last season, it wasn't great. There were some really bad moments. But it also wasn't the worst season ever, which is kind of weird to take as a positive. But you kind of just have to see with them. I wouldn't say it's a little bit of a transition year just because they have the new GM, so it's a little bit of like a culture shift, but you kind of just have to see where it goes.
And the Islanders have been a really weird team like that for the past few years, where their season almost starts, you would think, like in February. And then pretty much whatever kind of a streak they go on in the end of February, early March, if it's a winning streak, they're probably winning themselves into the playoffs. If it's a losing streak, they're losing themselves out of the playoffs. But they never seem to be like fully in the basement, but they also never seem to be fully like in control of their own destiny, going into the postseason. So we'll see if they can sort of not even rebuild, because like Patrick Waugh is still there. Like you said, there is a new GM, but that's less of a rebuilding process and more of just kind of a fresh pair of eyes on the situation that the Islanders currently are in. But just to touch on the Devils really quickly here before we finish out, I think there's plenty of optimism in Newark, New Jersey. But I mean, there was optimism for this most recent season, and then it kind of just didn't really pan out, especially after the winter break. That's been the place where Devils fans have been pinpointing as like, this is where it all went wrong. And they weren't the same after the winter, like the Christmas break. But you know, they already offloaded Eric Halla, which was kind of a long time coming. And I feel like the only reason he was still on the team as long as he was because of the injuries that the Devils were dealing with all year, and they kind of needed, like they just wanted to keep him around because they didn't want to have to throw somebody with less experience into that spot. But he is gone. He's off to Nashville. The Devils goalie situation, they're going to stick with Jacob Markstrom, but Jake Allen is looking to kind of find his way somewhere else because he is still a great goaltender and gave the Devils so much good time when Markstrom was out or when he needed a day off. So wherever Allen winds up going, I hope he stays in New Jersey for the sake of the Devils, but he probably won't, which means it'll probably be Nico Daws backing up Jacob Markstrom all year. And he wasn't terrible when the Devils brought him up. I just think he needs a little bit more time to develop. There's a couple of big contracts on the Devils payroll that they got to get rid of if they want to make any moves for anybody big. The craziest rumor I've seen so far this offseason was a possibility of Brad Marchand, for whatever reason, unplugging himself from that insane situation in Florida and coming to New Jersey. But he would have to fight Jesper Bratt over the number 63, so I don't think that's happening. But guys like Dougie Hamilton, who have been mainstays of the team for a while, but have been injured like just so much over the past few seasons, and the production isn't even really there anymore. Hamilton soars to the top of the list in terms of a guy who the Devils could possibly move to make some more room. But I think the goal for the Devils in this offseason will be A, sign Luke Hughes to a long extension. That's been well established as the main goal. The other thing for the Devils is going to be to round out that bottom six and make sure you can roll at least three, ideally four lines who are all really rolling. I don't just mean a fourth line that goes out there, skates around for like 2 minutes and then gets back off the ice. Like, it's got to be every line putting up production. And you know, with the addition of a guy like Arseni Gritsyuk, you never know what that's going to do to a team. A guy from the KHL who's been lighting it up in Russia, coming into the NHL for his first season next year on a minimal deal because it's an entry-level contract. So I think plenty of optimism in New Jersey, as there was last year. But if everybody can stay healthy, it should be a good year in Newark. Islanders have some things to look forward to as well. Rangers heading into a bit of a culture rebuilding year, but who knows? Igor Shesterkin can take that team as far as he wants to. But that's just gonna be just going to about wrap us up here on 5 on 3 this week. Long episode, a lot we had to unpack, but the Stanley Cup champions back to back are the Florida Panthers, and we'll likely see you not until next season, the 2025-26 season, and you know, we'll be on the coverage for WFUV Sports. I'll be covering the Devils. Grace will be all over the Islanders. Sophia will be all over the New York Rangers. But for Sophia Smith and for Grace McCarron, I have been Tucker Austin, and 5 on 3 is a production of WFUV Sports.